This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The wanton attacks on journalists covering the pandemic have the potential to undermine the morale of the media personnel and hamper the media's vital contribution towards efforts to contain the spread of the disease. There is a sense of siege among media workers which does not augur well for its role as a platform for educating, informing, and sensitizing the population about the COVID-19.
That's Mohib Said of the Media Foundation of West Africa on attacks on journalists covering the coronavirus pandemic. Details coming up also. Cameroon eases its coronavirus restrictions, but neighboring countries refuse to grant access to people crossing the border. And Tony Allen, Nigeria's pioneering drummer, driver of the Afrobeat sound, has died in Paris at age 79. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. The UN Refugee Agency warns the more than 70 million people forcibly displaced by conflict and violence throughout the world are facing unprecedented hardships due to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
No region in the world is spared from the devastating health and economic consequences of COVID-19. Among those most affected are the forcibly displaced, including more than 25 million refugees, most of whom are being sheltered in some of the world's poorest countries. For example, the UN Refugee Agency says it has been receiving desperate appeals for financial aid from hundreds of thousands of refugees across the Middle East and North Africa, who have been unable to work since lockdowns came into force in March. It says more than 5.6 million Syrians who have taken refuge in neighboring countries, as well as 6 million people forcibly displaced within Syria, are in urgent need of money, health care, and necessities. UNHCR spokesman Andre Mahecic says an alarming number of refugees in Lebanon, Egypt, Iraq, and Jordan have lost their livelihoods because of the pandemic. He says many refugees are forced to skip meals, while others are threatened with evictions because they cannot pay the rent.
Groups at particular risk include female-headed households, unaccompanied and separated children, elderly people, LGBTI persons. Their situations can be improved through emergency assistance, notably through cash grants. Across this region, many are at risk of losing shelters and they are running out of means to support themselves.
Mahecic notes millions of Afghan refugees, including those in Iran and Pakistan, are facing a similar situation. He notes Afghanistan itself is facing the prospect of having its medical and social services overwhelmed due to the spread of COVID-19, this as an increasing number of Afghans return home. Elsewhere in the world, the UNHCR spokesman says the numbers of homeless and destitute Venezuelans throughout Latin America are increasing as jobs dry up because of COVID-19 lockdown measures.
Some are now resorting to survival sex, begging or hawking in the streets. Others are at risk of being prey to smugglers and illegal armed groups. With growing fears of social unrest, xenophobia and discrimination across the region, they are also on the rise.
The UNHCR reports it is working to provide emergency aid, including cash-based assistance and shelter across all major refugee operations. It notes the coronavirus crisis is worsening existing dire humanitarian needs globally. It says an infusion of cash is urgently needed to support these crucial aid operations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Press freedom groups say West Africa is seeing attacks on journalists as nations deal with the spread of the COVID-19. The Ghana-based Media Foundation for West Africa cites assaults, detentions, and legal actions against journalists covering the outbreak and the related issue. Stacy Knott reports from Accra, Ghana.
West Africa has seen improvements in press freedom since the 1990s as democracy has taken root in the region. Since the coronavirus pandemic began, though, press freedom groups say security forces have assaulted journalists covering the outbreaks in Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal and Sierra Leone, among other countries. The Media Foundation for West Africa's Muhib Saeed says reporters have also had their equipment seized or destroyed.
The wanton attacks on journalists covering the pandemic have the potential to undermine the morale of the media personnel and hamper the media's vital contribution towards efforts to contain the spread of the disease. There is a sense of siege among media workers, which does not augur well for its role as a platform for educating, informing, and sensitizing the population about the COVID-19.
The foundation also monitors claims made in the media about the pandemic and has appealed to reporters to double-check facts before publishing to stop the spread of disinformation. The New York-based Committee to Protect Journalists, Jonathan Rosen, has also been monitoring attacks on the press in West Africa during the pandemic. He says governments are using accusations of false news on the coronavirus as a pretext to crack down on press freedoms. He spoke from New York via a messaging application.
Now, with authorities looking to curb misinformation in relation to the coronavirus, there are additional concerns that legislation or emergency acts that include provisions that criminalize misinformation may be used against the press.
The committee cites instances of reporters arrested or detained while covering the coronavirus pandemic in Ghana, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone. There are bright spots in West Africa, though. Gambia was a hotspot for press violations under longtime dictator Yahya Jammeh. Gambian journalist Sherif Bojang Jr. fled arrest to exile in Senegal, where he lived for almost a decade until Jammeh was forced to step down in 2017 under international pressure. He returned to Gambia and became president of the Gambia Press Union, which has been working with officials to protect press freedoms, including in connection with COVID-19 reporting. Speaking from Gambia via a messaging application, Bojang says the union was quick to speak out when an official threatened journalists who were investigating a quarantine centre.
We felt that the director's threats were misplaced, and of course this was an attack on press freedom, and we engaged the government, and then that never happened. Journalists continue to do their work without any harm.
Under Jammeh's rule, press freedom groups documented cases of journalists being tortured, illegally detained, forcibly disappeared, and even murdered. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra, Ghana.
Cameroon has eased restrictions put in place to curb COVID-19, which has so far caused 1,900 confirmed infections and 63 deaths in the country, the highest in Central Africa. But the return to normal operations for restaurants and public transportation comes as Cameroon's neighbors have refused to grant access to people crossing the border. Mokedwin Kendeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cameroon Prime Minister Joseph John Nguté, speaking on state radio and TV Thursday night, said measures taken to contain COVID-19 spread created economic and social hardships, especially in the transport, hotel and catering sectors. Nguté said Cameroon's ability to contain the spread of COVID-19 has allowed President Paul Biya to ease some of the restrictions he imposed to stop the spread of the coronavirus.
The actions taken by the government to contain this pandemic are beginning to bear fruit. Although screening tests reveal new cases of coronavirus positive patients, the number of people declared healed of this disease in our country has been on the rise. Furthermore, the mortality rate from this virus remains low.
Nguté said bars, restaurants, and leisure facilities can now operate after 6 p.m. if customers and users respect safety measures such as wearing protective masks and staying at least 2 meters apart. Nguté also announced tax forgiveness financial assistance to companies and increases in family allowances and old age pensions as compensations for the effects of COVID-19. As Ngute was announcing that the restrictions in Cameroon had been eased, neighboring Chad, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea and Gabon announced that they were protecting their populations from the spread of COVID-19 to their countries by refusing to grant entry to people traveling from Cameroon. Justo Javendong Engono, governor of Equatorial Guinea's Kientem province that shares a boundary with Cameroon's south region, spoke on Equatorial Guinea State TV.
Dans le pays, la CEMAC, nous sommes des pays frères.
He says although the Economic Community of Central African States, CEMAC, which includes Cameroon, Chad, Central African Republic, Equatorial Guinea, Republic of the Congo, and Gabon, has always stood for the free movement of persons and goods, special measures must be taken to protect civilians whenever there are health hazards, and that is why Equatorial Guinea has stopped people from crossing over from Cameroon. He says even Equatorial Guineans who are returning from Cameroon must be quarantined at the border for 2 weeks to certify that they are not infected by COVID-19 before they can go back to their homes. Truck driver Didentama says on his way with supplies from Douala in Cameroon to Bangui in the landlocked CAR, he was refused access to CAR at the Cameroon border town of Garoua Boulaye. Speaking via a messaging app, he says his truck was disinfected and handed to a CAR driver while he was asked to wait at Garoua Boulaye. He says he was told that Cameroon has the highest number of confirmed COVID-19 cases in the whole of Central Africa, and CAR has decided not to admit any Cameroonian traveling to its territory until the spread of the virus is contained. He says he personally thinks that his rights are abused because drivers who are of CAR nationality are allowed to transport goods from Douala in Cameroon right to Bangui in CAR while he must stop at the border. Cameroon has also announced that schools that were closed March 17 as a result of COVID-19 will resume on June 1, 2020, but that its National Day on May 20 and Labor Day on May 1 will not be celebrated. Moki Edwin Kinzika for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The World Bank says Kenya's gross domestic product, or GDP, is projected to decelerate substantially in 2020 due to the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Senior officials from the World Bank said growth in East Africa's largest economy would drop to 1.5% this year. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The latest World Bank report says economic growth projection remains highly uncertain, with the outcome hinging on how the pandemic plays out internationally and within Kenya, along with policy actions taken to mitigate the situation. Even before being affected by the novel coronavirus, economists say Kenya's economy had decelerated. The World Bank estimates GDP growth in 2019 was about 5.6%, down from 6.3% in 2018. Felipe Jaramillo is the World Bank country director for Kenya.
This Kenya economic update provides a detailed account of recent economic developments and our sense of the outlook despite continued uncertainties about how deep and about how long this crisis will be. And the update also discusses some policy options to help confront the crisis. It is very possible that poverty will rise this year and that many will face unexpected hardships.
The report entitled Turbulent Times for Growth in Kenya predicts growth of 1.5% in 2020, with a worst-case scenario of a contraction to 1.0% if COVID-19-related disruptions in economic activity last longer. Kenya has reported 396 confirmed cases of COVID-19, including 17 deaths. Authorities have suspended all international travel and imposed a dusk-to-dawn curfew and other measures to contain the deadly virus. Caro Karuga, Chief Executive Officer of Kenya Private Sector Alliance, KEPSA, an umbrella body of the country's private business community, told local KTN television that the business environment is difficult.
You're not the only one. If you look around the world, every country is trying to think about some economic stimulus, both for business and for the people, just to cushion them in this season. Most of the sectors hit are non-essential manufacturers, tourism, the airlines, logistic companies. Any sector that is not in the essential list has actually been hit. The ones that we're seeing that will actually survive in this season are manufacturers who are producing the PPEs, the health essentials. We are also seeing agriculture because people have to eat.
Experts say travel restrictions and suspension of public gatherings are necessary to delay the spread while the country ramps up investment in its healthcare systems. However, they are also quite costly to the economy by reducing social interaction, production, and demand across all sectors. Peter Chacha is a senior economist at the World Bank and a lead author of the report.
Governments have responded to enable health system to be able to cope potential spike in infections, but also to quickly pivot towards supporting firms so that there are not going to be massive layoffs, and also protect the most vulnerable households so that they're able to cope through this crisis.
In its report, the international lender finds the pandemic is disrupting trade and key sources of foreign exchange, such as tourism and cut flour exports. It is also expected to weigh on remittances and foreign direct investment, with the global economy sinking into a deep recession. Jaramillo says it is critical for the country to scale up available social assistance programs to provide poor households with food, water, and other basic supplies. Kenya's medium-term growth is projected to rebound fast to about 5.6% over the medium term, on assumption that investor confidence will be restored soon after COVID-19 is contained. But there are also risks for drought and a second round of locust invasion in mid-2020. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
France has said Britain and the United States will continue to support the French-led counter-extremism mission Operation Barkhane in Africa's restive Sahel region. Rising violence between governments, insurgencies, and other armed groups in the central Sahel countries of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso has displaced over 1 million people in recent years. For more on the U.S. and U.K. support for France's military in the Sahel, journalist Catherine Field in Paris spoke with VOA's Jason Patinkin.
It had been anticipated that the Americans and the United Kingdom would extend their commitment to the Sahel operation, but in this day and age, the French were saying that until they had it on paper, the commitment, they weren't really going to be sure. So the French are really dependent on some of the logistics, particularly that the United Kingdom is bringing. If we have a look, the United Kingdom has 3 Royal Air Force Chinook heavy lift helicopters based in eastern Mali. They've been there since July 2018, and they really do help French ground troops to conduct operations. The geographical distances in Mali are just vast, so they do need these helicopters, these big heavy lift helicopters that the British are able to have there in support of Operation Barkhane. When it comes to the Americans, the French can rely there now on the intelligence and surveillance that the Americans have from their base in Niger. Plus, they'll be able to call on that air refueling and logistics from the American forces. 5,000 American forces in the region. The United States spends about $45 million annually on them. So in terms of the French, this is all good news because it takes the pressure off them slightly while they're still trying to come to terms with the changing situation in the Sahel.
This extension of their support, how long is this extension for?
We don't have any clear idea on how long these extensions will last. All we're hearing from the French military is that it's there for the time being. So whether they're going to be extended on an annual basis, that really is up in the air at the moment. But when you look, for example, at the United Kingdom, the fact that they are also wanting to be part of this new counter-terrorism special forces that's being set up in the tri-border area, that area Mali, Burkina Faso and Niger. That shows that the United Kingdom is interested in being in the region for a long time. They are putting some 250 special forces into that counter-terrorism operation that's going to be helping military capacity building. That's meant to be up and running by mid-2020. It could really be at full capacity by early 2021.
The Sahel has had, obviously, a huge increase in violence, especially in the central Sahel, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, over the last year and the last couple years. And with that, we've seen this Western military intervention there. How might this impact these insurgencies or just the level of violence in general in these countries?
On the one hand, yes, it will help. It will improve coordination, equipment and training, particularly for the local forces. However, the questions are now being asked is there really a strategy to deal with the root causes of unrest in the Sahel? And that is governance. It involves conflicts on a local level. And that is where the big criticism lies, that there really is no, if you like, no way at the moment of imposing some sort of peace process. There's no way of getting governance accepted on a local level in the Sahel. Unless you have that two-pronged approach, the military and having governance sorted out in the Sahel, a lot of the observers are saying you're just not going to get anywhere.
Tony Allen, Nigeria's pioneering drummer, who was the driver of the Afrobeat sound, has died in Paris at age 79. The Associated Press quotes his manager as saying, Allen died last night of heart failure. It was in the 1960s that the dynamic Allen and guitarist and composer Fela Kuti formed a partnership in Lagos. Both are credited with launching the catchy Afrobeat dance music featuring prominent guitars, complex brass harmonies, and polyrhythmic drumming. Allen and Kuti gained sales and fame throughout Africa, Europe, and North America. This year, Allen released Rejoice, a CD of music he created with the late great trumpeter Hugh Masekela. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bonkibilia Baro, I'm Yehis Wuhib in Washington. Thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.